Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Grim and Bloody Podcast. This show is a presentation of horror, thriller, and suspense, and is intended for a mature audience. Join us at your own risk.
Thank you for joining the Grim and Bloody Podcast. Tonight we have a sci-fi show, which is a wonderful change of gear for all those who like a little bit of sci-fi with their horrors as much as I do. Tonight we have Stimson Sneed, writer and director of Spirit, A Martian Story. Welcome, Stimson.
How you doing, guys?
Doing great. Thank you very much for sharing your work with us. I'm going to go ahead and introduce my two cohorts for this evening. We are minus Alamega for tonight, but I do have Kevin Nicholson. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing fine, Anthony. Did you have quite an adventure at the Walmart?
It's Walmart, so there's always an adventure we had. Joe, how you doing, Joe?
I'm doing fantastic, and I hope everyone's Thanksgiving was fantastic. And Al, feel better, man.
I'm sorry, I want to circle back to the Walmart. What happened at the Walmart?
Oh, nothing out of the ordinary, really.
No, okay. he just had to make a last minute trip, and I always think what's appropriate for this show is the connection that Walmart's a horror story in itself. And so it's more than appropriate to bring them up on the show.
Yeah, you get in and you're immediately looking for the exit. You don't take your eyes off it because you never know what's going to happen. Bruce Campbell might show up, if you didn't saw the Black Friday.
When you're faced with a zombie horde, you are making a decision. If you're right outside of a Walmart, you are making a decision. Do I face the horde or do I go into the Walmart? I might just face the horde, to be honest with you.
See, I would go into the Walmart first because I could get ammo, then face the horde.
Oh, well, okay. There you go. But then you have to deal with those dang door greeters.
Not if you have ammo.
Well, you have to get in order to get past them. but I could see where, just head right to the sporting goods section.
Always got to have the zombie plan.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go, gentlemen.
All right, Jeff, go for it, Jeff.
I actually was very impressed with the Mars story. I really thought at first, this is a wonderful documentary. We're learning so much about Mars. What brought you to make this short film?
It came down to the works of XKCD, the long-running webcomic. The main plot points of the film were actually a one-page comic that he very generously released into the public domain. And for years, I wanted to jump on that story because it touched me so much. But, I wanted to flesh it out from one page into a full 10 to 15-minute film. And unfortunately, when I first wanted to do it, my ambition exceeded my grasp. And so it was put on the back burner for the better part of 6 years. So when I finally got around to doing it, it's like, all right, let's do this right.
Well, I have to say that to me, when I watched it, and I was very impressed with it, just as Joe was, I definitely got the feeling that you were, on the one hand, gearing this towards children and the learning process, but you also have some depth to this. There's layers here that adults can appreciate, and the feelings of inadequacy with the Mars rover, character. The loneliness of the job, so to speak, and the just wanting to fit in. I think this appeals to more, to kids as well as adults, both. Yep. And was that something that you were looking at? I also see when Joe was saying that this is a documentary. It's yes and no. Is that it's kind of a documentary, but with a little mockumentary twist. on it. That this is, like you say, there's a little bit of fiction in here with the voicing of the Mars rover and things like that. But what kind of, were you looking to do something that encompasses all of that?
It was something that I did not really set out with specific goals. With a film, like a lot of films like this, and even more so when you get into larger scale ones, are an evolutionary process. The initial inspiration was, I like this comic. I think this comic would work well as film. But the moment I started digging into that, I realized I wanted this to be watched by kids. The comic itself really is all about the sadness and the loneliness and the disappointment. And the comic has a very different ending from the short film. And as soon as I realized that I wanted to make this for kids, because I wanted it to be inspirational to them. But I still wanted to keep all that emotional gravitas. I am a firm believer in the school of thought that says kids can handle a lot more than we give them credit for. So I never felt that the adult themes would preclude children from it. The big change I made to the narrative is the ending. Because originally, she just dies alone. That's the ending, kind of a downer. I wanted to add in this extra bit at the end that would become this hypothetical what if. Sooner or later, we're going to go to Mars, fingers crossed. And if enough of us go to Mars, sooner or later, we will find these robots. And what would probably happen is museums would be built around them, just like what happens in the film. And that to me was a much more inspirational and aspirational note to end the story on that would still retain all the themes and ideas of the source material that I wanted to keep to. That aspirational element is something I ended up digging into even further when I realized that I was going to be able to release this through the Aldrin Foundation, which puts stuff in schools. And that was the phase at which we decided to add in a lot more of the educational elements. All of that on-screen text, all of that was something that was sort of decided after the fact. Well, not after the fact, but we were well into the development phase when we realized we were going to do that. And then the very last thing that happened was choosing to include Stephen Squires himself to do the introduction and talk about the science. We had already finished the main version of the film at that point, but I wanted the version that had him as the introduction to be there for the Aldrin Foundation version. The problem was, once I watched it, I liked it better than the original, and now that's the only version because I think that's the best version. But I had to talk him into it.
Yeah,
well, go ahead. Okay. No, please, Anthony, go ahead.
I was going to mention when I was watching it that this film struck me as something that I would be watching while browsing the exhibit for Mars at the Academy of Art and Sciences. It had that look and feel.
That is very much by design.
A narrative, but also an informational landscape, especially with the positive ending. I thought that was a nice touch. It felt very, for someone who, I kind of try to follow the news, right, with the Mars rover and everything that we're doing in space, but it definitely felt like one of those true story, like reimaginings, of what might have been or what could be. So I thought it was very quick and fun rehash of maybe of one of the adventures of NASA. I was getting, I don't know if you guys, Kevin and Joe, you were picking up, I was picking up a lot of Wally feelings.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Go ahead. No, I was also going to mention, kind of also reminded me very little of, if let's say we had Wally instead of Mark Wahlberg in The Martian on Mars. That's kind of like what I got too.
Well, I'm glad you guys made both those connections, because those connections go a little deeper than you might expect. the lens they filmed the landscape scenes in Morocco for The Martian, which they made into the surface of Mars, is a very particular old lens that Ridley Scott likes to use a lot. We made a point, actually, of using the exact same lens. So even though we were shooting out in Death Valley as opposed to Morocco, we were getting the same internal shape to the glass as the film The Martian for those scenes. So that was actually a very deliberate attempt to emulate some of that look. It's funny that when you look at the rover, you see Wally. The face is the only thing we substantively changed in her design. From the neck down, she is identical to the real rover, other than the fact that the real rover does not move that way. From the neck up, we wanted to give her something emotional and expressive. And I gotta tell you, the moment that made me feel incredibly old was when I was talking to the animators who were all kids getting out of college, and I was trying to give them an example of what I was looking for, and my first reference was Johnny Five, and they had no clue what the hell I was talking about. And then I had to pivot to Wally to make them know what I was talking about.
Yes, but Johnny, your feeling, I'm sure,
lives.
You're, yeah, sure, your feeling,
Johnny
I'm
Five
sure,
all the way.
Your feeling was, I'm sure, oh, screw you guys.
I may have had slightly stronger internal monologue language, but that was the general gist.
Well, I want to tell you too, I also caught, by the way, if folks can get a chance to watch the behind the scenes video of this on which is also on YouTube.
It is
marvelous, because it gives me the feeling, especially when I get to watch Tara Strong going through the motions, and you actually do something that is like Andy Serkis motion capture, where you have the actor going through and the paces of walking and just, you know, being being spirit, and then you overlay it with the animation later.
Absolutely. The actor's name is Carissa Huff Adams, a wonderful actress who I've worked with over many years. Currently Seattle-based. She was on a couple episodes of Grimm. She's done a lot of good work and is a wonderful person to work with. I wanted to work with her on this for a couple reasons. The issue is, what we were shooting is what's called a plate. So a plate is when you have the background to a shot is the real element, and then the foreground element or the action is computer generated. And the problem with shooting a plate is it's kind of boring, and you have to imagine what the rover is going to do in the shot. I've not worked a lot with CG, so for me, I like having an actor work with. Even though the plates themselves are static 90% of the time, going through and filming with Carissa, getting the exact beats that the rover is going to follow down, really helped us figure out if our camera angle was right, if our look was going to be right. And then she lended a lot to the performance. It was not true motion capture. You can tell she's just wearing a puffy parka to stay warm because it was freezing out there. But we did have the animators emulating her movements and emulating, most importantly, her timing of things. So she and I would carefully go through, it's like, all right, Rover's going to look up, look left, turn head. But all of the timing to that, that's just Carissa creating a performance, which we followed pretty exactly in post when we got into the effects for it. And conveniently, Carissa is actually the exact height of the real rover. Like, her eye line is exactly where the real rover's eyes would be, which is just super convenient for getting scale right.
Well, what I just thought was interesting was that I kept getting the impression, as Carissa was going through the motions there, that this must be some of what Andy Serkis, did when he, even though he had the motion capture suit on and so forth, it was still the physical movement to try to interpret the character of the rover, or at least somewhat. Now we'll say Tara Strong as the voice of Spirit, such a sweet voice.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it. I loved it, and it gave it
that real... was the most endearing part.
Yes.
Two actors, wonderful actors, I got to talk about there. So let's talk about Tara first, real quick. Tara is such a seasoned pro. She walks into the sound booth, sits down with me, and she And she asked what sort of voice I was looking for. And I felt really bad because I felt my direction was really crappy here. Because the best I could think was, I want the vocal timbre of Raven, but with none of the gothiness. Like, this is Raven's from Teen Titans speaking voice, but a more upbeat, happy version of that, but with that same back of her throat gravel that Raven has when Tara is in that character. Tara knew exactly what I was talking about. She played with it for all of maybe 10 minutes before she just stepped in and was Spirit. She sort of played with a couple different vocal versions, and it was starting from a very basic note from me. I mean, I always feel guilty if you're citing an actor's other performance as a jumping off point, but it's a testament to her professionalism. With Carissa, what you can't tell from that behind the scenes footage in terms of the performance she's trying to give, because I removed all the audio, is that she's doing that in 50 mile an hour winds. We were screaming at the top of our lungs to be heard 20 feet away from each other. Anytime she is on camera, I'm not giving her notes off camera. I'm waving my arms like a cartoon character because she cannot hear a word I'm saying, including action roll camera. So she's doing all of that in really brutal weather conditions.
That's a winner for me. Yeah, if you can get your actors or actress to face forward and just like, go for it, we're rolling. No, but that's fantastic.
Yeah, in a couple of the shots in that behind the scenes video, you may have noticed that Carissa is actually wearing goggles, swim goggles. It's because the sand was blasting us so hard, none of us could see. We actually stopped at a swimming pool, bought goggles after the end of the first day of filming, because we were actually being blinded when we were out there from just the sand pressure.
Holy. Wow. Yeah, go ahead,
Kevin. And by the way, I don't think I've ever seen a more impressive display of Death Valley as Mars. That seems like such a natural location, a natural, obvious location for to portray an alien landscape.
Well, there's
that Star Trek, when they filmed that in the 60s, they often used areas like Death Valley and Vasquez Rocks and so forth to portray it. So this had to be easy for you. Yes, Death Valley. Let's do it.
This spot, well, actually, we went to Death Valley for a very specific reason. And the spot we went to, you will not find it marked on any map. It's something I had to go to a lot of trouble to look it up myself. But we were on a small hill, which is maybe the size of a football field, known as Mars Hill Death Valley. And it's called Mars Hill because in terms of the surface material, it is the closest approximation to the surface of Mars in North America. The real rovers, the real Spirit, was tested on this exact spot. That's why we filmed it there. The real rover, well, not the real ones, they would obviously not bring them out there, but the exact duplicate ones that they still have in storage at JPL. Were tested out on those surface rocks.
Right, and it's that devotion to detail and realism that I think really causes this short film to stand out.
Well, thank you. One of the funny moments was when I was talking to Steve Squires. I asked him if he recognized it as Mars Hill because I knew he would have been there on the testing spot, and he looks at me and goes, "Who do you think named it Mars Hill?"
That seems like something that Steve would say.
Yeah. So it's like, oh my goodness, I was already in awe of you, sir, but now I'm in greater awe.
No, it was actually me.
So yeah, that's actually why we filmed there, and we use CG to remove what tiny bit of sagebrush is in the background. We painted out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Hey, can I, I'd like to bring up, change the subject just real quick. I know we've been focusing on Spirit.
I was going to say, we don't have to. You're giving me lots of compliments. I'm happy to stay on the subject for as long as you like.
Well, I was going to say is that I did also check out your concept trailer, your concept footage for Treat Night. Is that
Preach. Good God, yes. How did we even find that?
Actually, that was sent. First of all, I'd like to take a moment to you, now that we have this moment, I take a moment to thank Christina Pinnell at Zilker Media for helping to bring you as our guest here. And it,
you know, thank you very much.
Fabulous. Thank you very much. She's the one that provided me links to both Spirit and to Treat. And I just wanted to say, I do hope that Treat gets into, does get made as a feature, or does get, you know, made as a larger short, for example. I do think there's a story to tell there. It seems like a really charming, endearing, slightly horrific story for children. That you can play. And I just fell in love with the little girl who plays the Thor character.
Yes.
Where she keeps trying to say throughout the short, I'm not Janie, I'm not, you know, whatever her name was,
Jackie.
I'm Thor. And she has the courage to stand up to the bullies.
Oh, absolutely. Now, that was a project I did quite a few years ago, yeah. And it's one of my current white whales, you might say. Uh-huh. So that's actually in development as a feature. I'm hoping it's going to be the follow-up feature to the one that I made this past year. Mm-hmm. And it's in development right now. That kid, by the way, her name is Abby Amy. I can never pronounce her last name, and if she ever hears this, I'm going to owe her a massive apology. But this was long enough to know that kid is very much a grown adult now. Out in the world and living her best life, as far as I know. But she was an absolute joy to work with on set, as were both her peers.
And I also enjoyed the young boy who is being told by his parents that he has to explain who Oppenheimer is.
Which, by the way, one more reason that I really want to make this film right now. I made the short film the proof of concept for this, sure, several years ago, and I thought the Oppenheimer was a fairly obscure joke. Right now, it's zeitgeisty. Like, the joke has gotten so much better for reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with me.
Right.
So, like, now we got to dress him up as Cillian Murphy in the feature version.
There you go.
Well, you can thank Robert Downey Jr. For getting the interest for Oppenheimer up and going, and Cillian Murphy. But I always think if it's successful, it's Robert Downey Jr. involved.
Because he doesn't
do too many things that are unsuccessful these days.
See, in my original draft of that script, I actually had a lot more Oppenheimer jokes that I took out because I didn't think anybody would get. Now I get to put them all back in. Like, just time has been good to this project.
Yeah.
So it's still very much in development. There's a screenplay for it. We have a couple attachments. Let me check the IMDb. Who am I allowed to mention? Let me just see here.
Well, and I'll just add to you that another thing that it that to me what endeared me to it is that it had that Monster Squad, Monster Kids vibe, and I know all of us here are big fans of the original movie Monster Squad. And so forth. And while that one deals with actual Dracula, the actual monsters, and so forth, there was a certain, like, good versus evil, the good kids versus the evil ones. And you actually, in this short, you actually leave it a little bit of an open question as to is there some supernatural stuff involved here? For the kids. I thought the one girl in the skeletal costume and makeup was particularly a little bit frightening and a little bit ethereal.
Yeah, Agony, who was played by Eliza Jacobson, a wonderful young actress. Mm-hmm. The film does not actually have any supernatural elements officially. The conceit of the feature version, which you can see sort of being toyed with in the short, particularly with actually the wolf kid, is that it is an abstracted reality. There's nothing technically supernatural, but it exists in the mind of the 11-year-olds. So when they see a teenager dressed as a wolf, they don't see a costume, they see a wolf. They see someone who moves as a wolf.
Right.
Agony behaves monstrously to them. So from their perspective, she is literally monstrous.
Right.
in her depiction. And right. That's kind of the idea and the conceit behind the feature version of it, which is...
It worked.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah. Stinson, before we wrap this up, we want to know where our listeners can follow you.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very easy to find. I'm on Instagram at Stimson the Awesome Sneed, and I'm also on Threads as Stimson the Awesome Sneed. It's real easy to find me. Or no, just Stimson Sneed. Virtues of a weird name. Easy to find.
Right.
I've never had to add a number to my name for an email or an account.
I was going to say, you have an easy time creating usernames, right?
Oh, yeah, it's great. Although, apparently not true with video games for whatever reason. I don't know who the bastards are out there using my name as their fantasy orc character, but I wanted that to be my fantasy orc character.
Dang it, you're going to just have to do some investigating on this.
Well, it will be a Highlander situation. There can be only one, so I will find a decapitation.
Very true.
Overreaction, awesome. You might say? I disagree.
Nah. Not at all. Well within. Well, Stimson, thank you very much for coming on the show. I love the work. It was just an endearing piece that I was not expecting at all. And thank you for bringing back memories of Matt. I think, Joe, earlier you were referencing Matt Damon's The Martian.
Matt, Mark, good movie. It's the same.
Wally. This movie belongs somewhere in an exhibit. It belongs somewhere where children and parents can walk through and look at stuff and sit down and watch this for 5 or 10 minutes like you can normally do, you know, with the museums, how they have the projector set up. So hopefully it gets its moment to shine. Someone plucks it off of YouTube and said this would be an amazing piece for a project I'm putting together.
It's actually out there already. It's a part of the Aldrin Foundation's educational materials, and they go to dozens and dozens of schools.
Oh, awesome.
So awesome. That it is very much in its home. And I feel like I have to put the plug out there, but the big thing in my world to be following right now, and we've announced it online, is the feature film Tim Travers and the Time Traveler's Paradox coming out next year.
There we go.
So, yeah.
Fantastic.
Tim Travers.
We can look forward to it. As Anthony said, I'm not a guy who is a big fan of animated films, but I did see WALL-E when it came out, and I have to say that I, as an adult, was enthralled with it. And this short brought back the fond memories of what I was enthralled with WALL-E. It was just fun. I have no doubt if they haven't contacted you by now that Pixar may say, Stimson Sneed, let's give him a call.
Believe me, they can have my number. I will take that call.
And it's certainly, like I said, I hope something comes of Treat, because it was fun as well, and it brought me back some memories of my trick-or-treating days as a child and my wild imagination in that regard as well.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, and that's what the film is meant to do, and hopefully it's going to be the follow-up to the feature we're doing now. So
there you go,
fingers crossed.
Yes, all the best with that.
Fantastic. All right, well, I guess I will bid you gentlemen adieu.
Thank you very much, Stimson. And usually we have Al here to give us his shout out. But Kevin, you want to take us out tonight?
I will say definitely check out Spirit, and definitely check out the concept trailer for Treat. And definitely pull for feature versions of those two films to come out, especially Spirit. Watch horror films and keep America strong.
Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night.